Thanks, Bill, and thank you, Jay. Thank you all. I have to say I'm a little embarrassed to be standing up here in front of all of you because for a couple of reasons. One, there are a lot of energy experts in the room, and second of all, there are many people in the room that have really been a key part of REV, and so again, welcome. I do have a presentation, and so maybe it would be useful for me to run through the presentation because I think we're not bad at policy, but we're not so good at explaining policy. It's not a core competence, and the power sector, the energy sector, isn't always very sexy. So we would always very much welcome the input of people that could help us figure out how we can communicate what we're doing in a way that is understandable. My wife tells me, what's the one floor elevator pitch? And I'm not good at that. So in any case, I also want to, you know, also want to thank this group for all the work you do. And in particular, I'm grateful for the interest in state work because so much of energy discussion often takes place about what are the feds going to do. And actually, for a long time, perhaps people didn't realize it, states have a really important role in energy policy. It's actually shared with the federal government. And the other thing is, obviously, the energy transition is occurring. It's not something that is going to occur. It is already underway. And so what we see is, as Justice Brandeis said, states are laboratories of democracy. And across many states, not just New York, and not just blue states, but also red states, are trying to figure out what this energy transition means at the state level. And so as in other areas, we might expect in the past, in other policy areas, in the telecom area is a good example, it may be that a lot of policy is going to get worked out at the state level and eventually will get rolled up at the federal level when there's more consensus about certain areas. Because as Jay said, these energy issues in the past have not been partisan issues. They've often been geographical issues, not political partisanship. And so I think that we have a lot to learn from each other, from different states. Okay, so the first thing is it's interesting for those that are not familiar with states. So in about half the states in white, these are states where utilities are fully integrated, which means utilities own, when we talk about utilities, they own generation, transmission, and distribution. And the states in blue, and New York is one of them, when we talk about utilities, they're just wires companies. So Con Ed and National Grid are here. They don't own generation in New York State. They are just wires companies. And so it means that the generators get their economic rents from prices in wholesale markets, and the utilities, the distribution utilities, get their returns from a regulated rate of return in the past. All right, so we have a clean energy standing. 50% of our power is going to come from renewable sources by 2030. And this is not a goal. This is a mandate. But we're not going to achieve this 50% renewable mandate by doing what we've been doing, which has been to bolt on distributed energy resources and renewable energy onto a grid architecture that wasn't designed for this purpose. So we have a grid architecture. It's hard to see, but this is the sort of basic grid architecture of George Westinghouse and Nikola Tesla. And this architecture has electrons flowing in one direction over sometimes hundreds of miles from large power plants to consumers. And supply is determined on a given day by a fixed estimate of demand. And what we've been doing is we have been bolting onto this grid all kinds of resources for which it was never intended for. So we bolted solar onto the grid. And so what's happened is It's been, and other things, it's been good for those customers. So you're a solar customer, maybe get cheaper power, maybe have combined heat and power, maybe have more reliability. You have a fuel cell, maybe have better power quality. There are lots of reasons. Good for those customers. But the question has been, has it been good for all customers? And this has, of course, been at the root of the debate in other states about net metering. So the question is, we need to have a different grid, a fundamentally different grid architecture. And this one, you can see, is more complicated. And you can, and you've seen this picture one way or another in the past. But this is a grid that's a mix of large power plants and distributed energy resources, that electrons flow in more than one direction, where supply and demand are dynamic, and the intermittency of renewable resources are paired with storage and adjustable load. And arguably, we're never going to be able to decarbonize our whole economy unless we build this kind of grid. Because when we think about electrification of transportation or electrification of heat, we need to have this kind of grid. So the question is, why aren't we building this 21st century grid? And it's because we have policies and regulations that in the past have just been keeping us, or that have been, we've just been rebuilding the old grid over and over again. And so actually what we've been trying to do in a kind of analogous way, in the same way that we've been bolting on physical resources onto a grid for which it was never intended, we've been bolting policies onto a policy regime that was also intended to do something entirely different. You want a solar? Want solar? Great, let's bolt on a solar policy. Want energy efficiency policy? Let's bolt on an energy efficiency policy. So the good news in all this, in build, thinking about this new grid that we need to build, is that the current grid is energy inefficient, and we know that. That's not really news to anybody here, I think, because it was never designed to be energy efficient. But the other part is that the grid, the current grid, is financially inefficient. And so one measure of the financial inefficiency of the grid is to look at it in terms of its average capacity utilization, which in New York and in most places is a little bit more than 50%. Now, if you look at other capital-intensive industries in the last 35 or 40 years, in order to respond to global competition, they've had to significantly improve their average capacity utilization to compete through adoption of new technology, changes in financial incentives, and changes in business model. We may not like the airlines, but the airlines used to have 50% average capacity utilization. Now they're at 90% average capacity utilization. And that has resulted, because of what customers have wanted, significantly lower costs. But it's been true in other industries too. So the grid is built for the hottest hours of the days or the year, but customers pay all year long. And we can have a debate with the utility industry about how much excess capacity we need, but arguably we can do a lot better. And I want to tell you that if we could move the average capacity utilization over time to something that looks closer to other industries, we're talking about billions of dollars a year in New York State. And those billions of dollars could be used to provide eventual customer savings, or could be the source of funding to help build this 21st century grid. And as I say here, because the current grid is so financially inefficient, we can largely build a new grid within the cost envelope of the existing bill. And this is really where, when we talk about partisan issues, this is where Republicans and Democrats ought to be able to find common ground. So when you boil REV down, reforming the energy vision, it kind of boils, there are lots of policies, lots of initiatives, but when you really boil it down, it comes down to three buckets. The first is locational value for distributed energy resources. Because if we think about this grid that's supposed to be a mix of large power plants and distributed resources, where are the distributed resources supposed to be? Well, they should be on places on the grid where they're going to be good for not just those customers, but where distributed resources can benefit all customers. And so let's talk about that. So it's often in the case where there's a grid constraint. In a grid constraint, if you think about electrons flowing like water, there are constraints in the grid. Every utility has constraints in the grid. We're blessed in these purple areas to have a number of grid constraints, although we don't call them grid constraints. We call them opportunity zones. And so obviously locating distributed resources in these areas of grid constraint is where they're going to have the most value. And so providing a price signal to developers to go in these locations is going to mean not only lower cost because you have resources dedicated to developing those projects in those locations, but it's going to mean that the resources are going to be located in areas which are going to be good for those customers, but also provide economic value to the grid as a whole. And so this has been the successor to net metering in New York State. We haven't done it perfectly, but we have now established a value for distributed energy resources as a price signal for the market. And that is now being replicated slowly, I think is going to be replicated in other places around the country. So the second thing is to change regulated utility financial incentives and business practices. Because in New York State, when we talk about the price signals associated with the value of distributed energy resources, you know, that's great for the market, has nothing to do with utility financial incentives. The way things work in New York State, again, the utilities are wires companies. We have what's called decoupling, which means the utilities get have no financial compensation based upon if you use more electricity. They don't get paid any more money. They get rates which compensate the utility for the cost of service plus a rate of return on capital that's deployed. So really, when you talk about changing tariffs, you're just providing price signals. You're rearranging the pot of revenues. You're not changing the total revenues for the utility. So if we're going to change, in our view, if we're going to build this grid of the future, it is absolutely critical to look at changing regulated utilities, financial incentives, and business practices. So, and this is where I know some of my utility colleagues are going to object, but this is the traditional utility business model, for dummies maybe. It's, you know, through rates, utilities recover the cost of providing the service plus a regulated return on the capital deployed. The more capital that's deployed in the past, the greater the profit. The more capital deployed, higher rates unless there are more customers to share the costs. So what's wrong with this model? This is where we're going to may have some more debate. We think it's expensive. We can hardly be surprised that we have low average capacity utilization if you pay a business, incent a business based upon how much capital that's deployed. So we have capital that's built for the hottest couple of days of the year, but we pay for it all year long. I mean, we would argue that it's a deterrent to the adoption of new technology. If you think about IT and how IT has revolutionized other industries –